Brendan, you've been disavowed.
No!
The Not a Thing podcast, should you choose to accept it, is back on the air. Episode 153 for you this week.
I'm going Ghost Protocol, Alan. I'm going Ghost Protocol.
As you may or may not have guessed, we might talk about Mission Impossible. Just a little tease for the end of the show when we get over into spoiler land. But in the meantime, we got a whole good chunk of show to talk about. So we want to start out by saying hi to our current listeners. Thank you for listening and enjoying our show, tweeting our show, Facebooking our show, alphabeting our show, or whatever Google Plus is calling it now. And
no thanks. One's doing that, Alan.
Yeah, no one's doing that. yeah, Google Plus, still not a thing. unfortunately, still not a thing is something we've talked about in the past. We talked a little bit in insert episode here about the hack at Ashley Madison by a bunch of folks that were holding it for ransom and saying that they would not they would accept nothing less but the shutdown of the website. And apparently they've gone and released a huge chunk of data. I'm not sure if it's everything. There have been some sketchy reports about if it's even real, but at the same time it looks pretty bad. It looks like the majority of that data got released. I don't know if it's like if it's just a database and it's like names and usernames and email addresses. If I don't know if it goes as far as other information like credit cards or addresses, but
apparently it does.
Ooh, that's real bad. That's real bad. Because as much as you might not like, and I know we kind of came away with the same thought about Ashley Madison's site and business model, is that it's probably not a thing, but it's also not a thing to get doxxed, even if you're a piece of shit. I think it's not.
Yeah, doxing's not a thing.
Yeah. So I think that aspect of it is probably bad. So hopefully some good could come out of this situation. I'm not sure what or where, but just know that if you had a profile on Ashley Madison, you probably have it out on
change your credit card.
Yeah.
The public service announcement, change your credit card.
Identity theft is a thing whether you were trying to commit adultery or not. so just be aware and hopefully try and fix that. Although don't use, what was it, LifeLock? Because apparently they don't do
no.
They don't do a good job. So
LifeLock, not a thing.
That was also in an episode to be mentioned probably never, because I don't know. I'm never going to go back and look up which one that was.
No one has time for that.
Just know we talked about it on the show, because we're the Not a Thing podcast, and we talk about things. It's just what we do.
See, that's our gimmick now. We reference things from past episodes to get people to listen to past episodes.
Has it worked yet?
But I don't know. Tell you which one, so that you have to listen to all of them.
Get cracking. You have 152 to go. Well, moving on from the world of not a things to a world of things and multiple worlds of things far away and a long... No, that doesn't really work. But what I'm trying to say is Disney announced that they are building... new parks or additions to parks. I'm not sure if they're going to be separate parks or attached things, like, and they're just different things, like how Toontown was added to Disneyland, or if it's going to be an actual separate park. But the separate parks are going to be themed with their new property that is Star Wars. So they're going to have Star Wars themed lands. And I think the one in Disneyland, they announced a few details about it, and it's going to be 14 acres, which is pretty big. They've said that they're going to recreate kind of things from movies. If you've been to Disneyland or Disney World, actually, the Disney World area where they have the Star Tours, they built like kind of a little diorama indoors, which is what they have in Disneyland as well, where they have like, you know, like loading bays and junk machines and robots kind of that talk to you. But they also have an external component in Disney World where they have like the AT-ST Scout Walker and you know, little trees to make it look like Endor. It's really a nice touch. But imagine a whole land of that, kind of equivalent to like a Tomorrowland or a Fantasyland, and that's how big the parks are going to be. I'm pretty excited to see what they could do with it, because Disney certainly knows how to make an experience look and feel right.
I'm not a fan, really, of going to theme parks. I'm not a huge fan of going to Disneyland. I'm not going to Harry Potter World. I'm going to go to this. They cracked me. I can't... I'll probably have to wait a few years for the hubbub to die down a little bit, because yeah, lines are terrible.
Yeah,
but it's gonna. I don't care what it costs. I'm going. I'm going to that. It's gonna happen. It's a thing.
I was talking with a friend of the podcast and my wife Julie about this earlier in the week, and she said that it's definitely at least third tier behind the Harry Potter parks, if you know, Harry Potter World kind of thing, and definitely behind the Star Trek experience that unfortunately no longer exists.
Doesn't exist.
That was in Las Vegas, but it was glorious, let me tell you.
Well, I wanted to go to that, and then they took it away.
Yeah, yeah. There is supposedly a movement to restore at least the bridge section of the Enterprise for a museum display or something like that. That would be pretty rad. I'm still an original series fan, so. That would be, you know, but Next Generation Bridge, I'm down. I can be behind that. But so the one thing I think that excited me most for the list or for the Disney Parks stuff was that they mentioned one of the attractions, and it would be climbing into and either piloting or shooting from the Millennium Falcon. And
yes, please.
I think that's great. I think the you know, the fighters, the X-wings or whatever, I think those are fun, and you can kind of, that would be kind of cool to get in one and do stuff, but there's something to be said about walking around in a ship and having that, you know, look and feel authentic. And I think the Millennium Falcon is perfect for that. It's the right kind of size. It's a little cramped, but you can still kind of stand up. And there would be so many things to see and do and touch and muck around with. I think that'd be right. I mean, you know, they really should just give us a whole, what is it? Corellian cruiser to run around in, and then have Darth Vader blow into the hallway, you know, on one end. That would be awesome, actually. If we're going to do something, that would be great. But, you know, Millennium Falcon's a good first step. We'll see. Maybe the Disney World one will have more craziness.
Speaking of Star Wars, they did announce the director for Episode 9.
Oh, really?
Colin Trevorrow, who did Jurassic World, is going to be doing Star Wars.
Oh, interesting.
So this guy makes one indie movie that was good, Safety Not Guaranteed. Highly recommend it. Then he gets to make Jurassic World, and then he gets to make Star Wars.
Possibly the capstone movie, right? For the set, right?
At least I'm sure it'll be the last with the original cast involved at all.
There were a lot of Star Wars and related kind of news things that came out. I guess Disney's fan convention, D23, was just this last weekend, so they announced a bunch of Star Wars stuff and some Disney stuff, some Marvel stuff too. I think the Disney Parks thing was the one story to pick up. Everything else is, you know, it's cool too.
they did put out a photo from the cast of Rogue One that looks great.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for that.
I'm pretty excited about that too. In other entertainment news, but in a different direction, HBO made a deal with Sesame Street. So Sesame Street has been kind of struggling and is always kind of crapped upon by mostly the Republican Party when talking about publicly funded TV as an example of waste, which I 100% do not agree with, but I think Sesame Street is great, and so did the folks at HBO, because they agreed to sign a funding deal with Sesame Street, so that at least hopefully will take it out of the sights and talking points of the presidential election. So maybe we could talk about something actually relevant. Probably not, though, knowing the news cycle around elections.
Feel the burn.
But in the meantime, the one of the things that Sesame Street is getting out of this is funding, of course, but then also a streaming platform. So they'll be able to have their shows put on through HBO and through HBO's Go and HBO Now, I assume, but having all of those episodes available for streaming in one place, that's kind of a big deal. They're not going to be 100% exclusive with being on HBO, because HBO is a paid channel, and PBS is not. They do recognize that having the content available for everyone is still a thing, and so they're going to still release everything to the public over kind of the air and PBS, but it'll be I think 9 months delayed, which is kind of weird. I don't know. I guess I don't know what the half-life is on a Sesame Street episode.
I'm sure after the first 9 months, no one will care, because kids don't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like Sesame Street is really on the cutting edge of you know, pop culture necessarily. Although they do make parodies of shows every once in a while for their sketches. Like, I remember seeing one for I think it was Homeland, where Carrie was a sheep, and they had Saul, which I thought was great, be another sheep, and they were trying to find the wolf, and it ended up being like Brody's character. He's a wolf in sheep's clothing, and it's really silly, but also the kind of thing where I don't know how many people would get it. And I'm talking about adults too. It just seemed like too obscure of a reference, but
well, I hope that with this new deal, they'll be able to have more crossovers with other HBO properties. Like, I can just imagine Game of Thrones, Sesame Street, or like Deadwood.
My God.
Well, I mean, it is kind of like The Wire.
Yeah.
I mean, it's on the street. You got Cookie Monster's clearly an addict.
Right, right.
That's well-beaten comedy material, yeah. But I'm just saying.
Yeah, there could be some good stuff from that. I would love...
I want to see Omar on Sesame Street.
Yeah, I think it has some potential there, too. I don't know if they would do that kind of crossover, but, like, having... Like similarly to the way the Muppets were originally just kind of Jim Henson's platform for comedy and screwing around, and it became kind of synonymous with like family friendly stuff. But if you ever can look back at some of those archives, they're like they can be, you know, pretty dirty, filthy comedians, because that's who was doing the stuff behind the scenes. And so, you know, a more adult version of the Muppets is a thing. And then a more adult version of Sesame Street already exists. It's called Avenue Q. It was a great Broadway show. Definitely worth looking up. But a sanctioned one, I don't know if it's absolutely necessary, but I think it would be it would be interesting to see more content that crosses over in any form, really.
I just hope they don't do the pay cable thing of requiring nudity in all their shows. Nobody needs to see that.
Well, I mean, Big Bird is nude.
But they're still feathers. You don't want a fully plucked Big Bird.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right.
But it's good for them to say, you know, try and save that important service since the government won't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, we found an interesting article that ascribed Sesame Street to be like the closest thing to a public works association kind of project, like a thing that public dollars goes to that provides a public utility. It's providing education to people that that literally can't pay for it or don't have to, right? So it is unfortunate that it's come to this after all the years that it's there. But at the same time, I think HBO does offer it a fair amount of platform, and as long as that it is available in some form through public television, I think it's still good. I mean, as time goes on, public television as an entity, you know, is still kind of on the ropes, you know, competing with not only just, you know, regular commercial TV, but then of course paid on-demand services, you know, and video, like, you know, Netflix and HBO, all of those things are reality, and partnering with probably the one of the more pioneering platforms, HBO, I think it's a smart kind of play on Sesame Street's side. So we will see. I'm a fan. Sesame Street is still a thing. I still have that the counting song that's done with kind of like a pinball machine, where they count to 10, and then they choose a number, and then there's this kind of weird funky music break as they say the number. That one's great. And anything with the count, I just like numbers is really what it is. Have I mentioned that, numbers? We're listening to episode 153 of the Not a Thing podcast, where we're talking about numbers. Numbers are a thing. Sesame Street's a thing. Sesame Street on HBO, definitely a thing. Also, definitely a thing is some news out of the Black Hat conference this most recent weekend, I believe. So Black Hat, if you don't know, similarly to DEF CON, is, I believe they're even either the same week or like right after each other in Las Vegas, but they're two conventions. Mostly DEF CON is more like a hacking one, and Black Hat is more like a security oriented one. So, but it's still, you know, there's a lot of crossover between the groups. I think we talked about all of that last year. There's another callback. You just have to go back and watch, or rather listen to all of the episodes of the podcast. I really don't know what to say. But if you do that and then come back up, we'll link to a great speech given by Jennifer Granick, who is a lawyer, and then also I believe she works for a Stanford-funded kind of arm for internet rights. And if you read the transcript or watch there's a video now of it, you will be I think you'll be very, not surprised, but very intrigued about how much her view of the internet and the state of the internet and all of the things around it about data collection and privacy and centralization of resources and your right of your right to your information and things you buy, how so many of those things align with ours here at the Not a Thing podcast. it's really great. If you don't mind how long of a read it is. It is a little bit of a read, but totally worth it. I think one of my favorite pieces of it is that she talks about how you know, she's been in the information her career grew up through the information age and trying to connect to people who were hackers before they were called hackers, and really basing her career around the rights of those folks. So she has a really kind of deep set of knowledge that's big and historical. And the article goes through a lot of nice just stories that are of like how we got to here and what is here and what you know, what things are around and broken and what is still to come. There's a big focus on a movement called the Right to Tinker, which is specifically around essentially when you buy something, the idea that you own it and can mess around with it. This is something that's been a little contested recently. There was a story we talked about with the Jeep and how their cars were susceptible to hacking remotely, so you could, you know, shut their brakes off and mess with the GPS and other things like that. Initially, Jeep and Chrysler wanted to suppress the news of the hack using the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the DMCA provision against exposing kind of trade secrets and things like that, and essentially saying that even though that those people have bought their vehicles, that they don't have the right to mess with the firmware, because the firmware and the other software of that involves running the car is the intellectual property of Jeep and Chrysler. And that this is done in a bunch of other kind of things too. And it's a way to say that you know, you're only essentially renting parts of your car, which is not a thing. I think
not a thing.
There's a thing to be said about like licensing, and a thing to be said about fair use. Unfortunately, both of those things are hotly contested kind of items about and not really discussed with the level I would say, care and understanding that it takes to correctly implement something. I think a lot of people, myself and Jennifer Granick included, don't necessarily trust our lawmakers' ability to understand the problems that they might be causing by sending like reactionary or creating reactionary laws to fix like, you know, security problems or things like that. The internet is, we've said, a wild and woolly place, and probably involves a lot of looking and less acting, at least right away. Measure twice, cut once is what we're trying to say. But definitely check that out. I don't know. Have you seen anything from DEF CON or Black Hat that looked interesting?
Nope. I am out of the loop.
I remember one year, one of the things they did was that they hacked the Wi-Fi. And what they did was they set up a Wi-Fi portal that would that masqueraded as everyone else's Wi-Fi. So if you were roaming around and you landed on the same on that Wi-Fi access point, what it would do, it would route your it would route an automatic proxy server. So whenever you went to a web page, it would replace all of the images that were in the files or in the websites that you were downloading with pictures of cats. Which is, I think, the natural state of the internet anyway, so it was probably well received.
Cats and butts, that's the internet.
The other good one was they hacked an ATM to essentially like steal people's PIN numbers, and then they put them on a big screen, all the people that use the hacked ATM. But they didn't tell you which one it was in the convention center, which is I don't know. That's bad. But that's the kind of shenanigans that happen at a DEF CON or a Black Hat conference. And there's also stuff like lock picking competitions and presentations about different hacks and exploits. It's something I'd like to go to. I think that would be fun. I would like to do a little more research about which is which and which one would be more interesting to go to. I tend to only go to the really boring work related conferences in Las Vegas. One year when I was there, they had a conference about promotional materials. So they had a swag conference. You can only imagine what they gave away there.
Nothing you probably want. It's a bag of bags. Yay.
Well, speaking of bags and things that people want, there was a Korean national who was trying to fly back home, and he was detained at LAX for being I'm actually not sure how, why they detained him. They were saying he was under suspicion of participating in essentially an arms sale, eventually with goods eventually bound for Iran. And I think he was trying to buy trying to transport accelerometers, which would be used for rockets, I guess, or something.
That's usually what they're used for.
Some
in those situations.
Yeah. So I believe it was the FBI. Well, the TSA probably nabbed him and then passed him off to the FBI,
TSA did something?
Yeah. I mean, maybe they were under direction of someone else, but you know, they're only wrong, what was it, 96% of the time. So according to the last kind of tests that they had, or the field tests that were done. So Maybe this is in that 4%. So anyway, they pick this guy up and they search through his stuff and they found a laptop. And I guess there is some precedent for it because they obviously did it. But what happened was they searched his laptop, and I don't mean searched like looked at it and checked it out to see if there were weapons or anything. They actually logged in as him and then did the equivalent of data forensics on the laptop to look for files and data pertaining to this potential arms sale. And it sounds like they actually caught him, quote unquote, red-handed with the accelerometers, but because of the way the search was done through, which was warrantless and very invasive. I mean, logging into a laptop and kind of looking for data without a warrant. It was to that point that the prosecution is saying that they probably have to drop the case because they're not going to be able to admit the laptop as evidence, and it is to the point where it pretty much makes the you know, it sucks. It's you know, one of those things where the evidence gathering was so botched it invalidates the crime that's involved, and you'd think that shouldn't happen, and hopefully there's you know, the accelerometers are not allowed to be used in weapons at all, but it's another of those things that where you know, warrantless kind of actions by law enforcement or law enforcement entities can be bad even in pretty cut and dry cases, right? We've talked about kind of the dangers of overreaches of power for law enforcement especially, and this is one of those cases where it's really super just unfortunate that it's happening that way. I think the thing to take away from it is, you know, your kind of personal property and data is one of those things where it's still very hotly contested. And we've talked about that on the show in the past. Like we said, the keynote by Jennifer Granick at the Black Hat Conference also mentions that, you know, data security and sovereignty is real important and something people should be kind of looking at and thinking about. Kind of taking data sovereignty and arms dealing in a different direction, we're going to move over into spoiler land and talk about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. This is a movie that I think you saw it when the week it came out, which was 2 weeks ago. Is that right?
Yeah.
And I was kind of on the fence about it because I'd seen the first and second Mission Impossibles in the theater. And it was mostly the second one which made me not want to see the third one, nor Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, the fourth one, in the theater. And I was still kind of like, I don't really want to reach all the way back and catch up. But for the good of the podcast, I did. over the last 3 days, I've watched 3 Mission Impossible movies. I saw...
You saw 2 good Mission Impossible movies?
I saw Mission Impossible 3 on, I guess that was, actually it was 4 days. I saw that one on Saturday, and then I saw Ghost Protocol last night, and then I watched Rogue Nation just hours ago. And yeah, I'm full of Mission Impossible. I think I may not need to see any more.
I think you did too much. I mean, these movies have been coming out over the last 19 years.
That's true.
You gotta pace yourself. You overload, you watch it all at once, you realize the bullshit within.
Yeah.
Like
it's very true. I think this is one of those situations where binge watching is bad because I noticed a lot of just kind of silly things that the movies would do to make them work. I mean, I was actually a pretty avid watcher of the original show. I remember watching it as a kid. It was that and Star Trek, the original series, were like right after each other.
Leonard Nimoy?
Yeah, that's true too. And so it was a fun kind of combo to watch. The Mission Impossible show was not exactly an action-oriented show. I mean, there really is no equivalent right now because I think people are used to seeing kind of actual martial arts and and gunplay, whereas then like martial arts was or any fighting that was more than just like punching someone was, you know, the joking like judo chop from I've forgotten the name. It's completely fallen out of my head. The Austin Powers movies, judo chop, and then you just kind of hit the guy, and then he would fall unconscious, and that was the equivalent of fighting in those things. And they didn't really show a lot of guns either. It was much more of a spycraft kind of show, but it was also like let's use kind of gadgets and masks and trickery to essentially get the bad guy or the target to either give up some piece of information that incriminates him, or in some instances have him take himself out. So there was very little what I consider like direct action against the bad guys, other than kind of capturing them and then putting them through this rigor of stuff. And so it was an interesting show. And when the first Tom Cruise movie came out, it was definitely like an action movie first and then kind of a spycraft movie second. And I think that's been true throughout the whole series. What I think I liked about Rogue Nation was that it actually came back to that that I'm going to trap you because I can think multiple steps ahead of you kind of thing that they really didn't do or didn't do very well in the movies up to that point. I think they wanted to do that in the first movie, and it ended up feeling like a Scooby-Doo episode, complete with the like I'm gonna tear off my mask at the end. And, I would have gotten away with it too, kind of moment. But the thing I didn't like about that in this newest movie is that they openly say that it's like I'm telling you, I can think ahead of you. And Ethan Hunt, you know, the Tom Cruise character, is like, oh, but I knew you were going to think that, so I thought ahead of you. And it's like, ah, okay, all right, I get it. It was a better movie than I think the third one. I'm not sure.
Oh, the third one's not. I don't like the third one. J.J. Abrams blew it.
Yeah, the third one. I don't know. They introduced kind of a romance element to it, where he's his fiance, played by Michelle Monaghan. Yeah. Yeah, and that's fine. I think they focused on it an inordinate amount, and I think the plot itself was also just not a Mission Impossible worthy kind of thing in my eyes. Like the impossibleness of it was not really there.
On the plus side, 100% less Limp Bizkit than in the second movie.
So I actually liked the second movie's stylishness, although it goes way too far. But that was
it's because
always...
John Woo directed it, right. And John Woo is a ridiculous human.
Right, right. You know, the slow motion jumping through the air with two guns and birds for no reason. Yeah, it's very John Woo, actually. If you've seen any of his Hong Kong action films, they're very much like that. And that's fine. But I did like the stylishness of the movie, because that's how the show was. It was very like, you know, we don't have to get our hands dirty kind of a show, because we're smarter than them. And I think they you know, that's something that doesn't necessarily work in modern kind of gritty movie settings. So that's that, you know, they had to adjust that for the movies. But the third movie was not super good. I think the fourth movie I actually liked from a like the bad guy was driven the right amount. Like, you could tell he was a bad guy because he had like a reason to be bad. I mean, it was kind of a silly reason, but it was like a reason. He wanted to bring about the reconfiguration of the world if only there were a nuclear war. And I think that's, they use that in a, that was a James Bond bad guy plot. Which
I think these movies do a better job than James Bond up until the Daniel Craig Bonds.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch, like, if you, I'd put these up against Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I definitely put it up against some of Roger Moore's shittier movies. But I think the first Mission Impossible movie hit me at just the right... I was like 10 when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it in the theater. And that hooked me. And the second one was terrible.
Yeah.
The third one I didn't even see in the theater because the second one was so terrible.
Yep.
Brad Bird did the fourth one. I think I've made it clear on the podcast. I like Brad Bird.
No, I think they got the tone right for that movie. Because I think the third one was like too serious. And the second one,
yeah,
like, was too self-indulgent and silly.
I think what I really liked about this new one was that it incorporated elements from all the other movies. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been 19 years since the first one came out.
Yeah.
And there were shots that I'm really becoming a fan of Christopher McQuarrie. There were shots that I recognized from the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like camera angles, the setups, like everyone's like, did they just take a scene from that first movie? And the same thing, like, there's a great chase scene in the last third of the movie that involves motorcycles.
Yeah.
I thought was really well done. That was like in the second one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The third one redeemed motorcycle chase from the second one.
But they got this huge like set piece, like in the fourth one where they climb the big tower.
Yeah.
In this one, they dive into that ridiculous water contraption.
Yeah. Which I think that suffered from a little too much of a CG look. Clearly the airplane bit was I think the best sequence from but then the car and motorcycle chase. So when they're in the car and the motorcycles are all around, I thought that was great. That was shot wonderfully.
I like what they've done. It's the fifth movie in the franchise. It's very self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like the Ethan Hunt character has gone from being the super serious guy, like in the first movie, to it's almost like he's aware how cartoonish his life is. Like, we're the impossible mission force.
Right.
And I'm invincible. Yeah. Like, yes, I was just dead and I'm going to go kill a bunch of people.
So it's the only thing that's unresolved is he still married after the fourth one? It's not really clear.
No, I think that was done.
Okay.
I think he left her behind.
All right.
But Rebecca Ferguson, was great.
Yeah.
The female lead in this new one. That's now the second Swedish actress of the year that has blown me away. This is the year of the Swedish actress.
I will let you know.
The other one being Ex Machina.
However, that all, I believe all five, I'm not going to go back and watch one and two to check, but I believe all, at least three, four, and five, or three, Ghost Protocol and Rogue Nation, none of those pass the Bechdel test.
No, probably
mostly
not.
Because they only have one woman in them.
Well, there's the woman in this one that gets shot in the head.
Yeah, she doesn't get named,
but she's barely in it.
And she doesn't. No, she definitely doesn't talk to the other woman that's in it.
So. No, she's dead before she gets introduced. But no, the fight scenes I thought were well done. I thought it was well shot. I didn't realize Christopher McQuarrie also wrote Edge of Tomorrow, or he worked on the writing of that. His last one he directed, Jack Reacher, another Tom Cruise movie, I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I guess they're going to make another one of those, so that's nice. But no, it was fun. It knows it's fun. Rarely is there a franchise where the fifth movie is still good or makes it, like, it takes a leap forward.
I'm looking at you, Star Trek.
Yeah, seriously. I will put this up against Star Trek 5 any day. I don't think it's better than Fast 5, though.
Is it better than Attack of the Clones?
I'm not even going to dignify that with a response.
You're right. I actually, Fast 5 brought me back to the Fast and the Furious franchise.
And it set a new direction for the franchise. Like, I could see it going for multiple more movies because they made it, they changed the premise and made it fun, but with the familiar characters. I feel that's kind of like what they've done with this. It's really self-aware and it's fun.
Yeah.
There's some shitty movies that are action movies. This is actually fun.
I think, I mentioned this before. I was pretty excited, watching just the trailers. In front of this movie, I mean, some of the trailers were just kind of meh, but the one I was most excited for is I saw the new Spectre trailer. I was already on board based on the 30-second teaser trailer for the new James Bond movie, but the new Spectre trailer is it's good. I'm really excited to see that movie. And I didn't know, but the one of the Bond girls in it was in Ghost Protocol.
Yes.
So there you go. It's all coming back. Well, I think I don't know if there's another movie I have to catch up on before our next podcast, but I hope everyone continues to listen. Hope if you would like to be a guest on the show and talk, maybe not Mission Impossible movies, but any movies, anything you'd like to see or talk about, we'd love to have you on the air. Just let us know, and we'll get you set up to record. It's easy. Lots of people have done it. We've had someone record from their iPad. It's nuts. Being on the Not a Thing podcast is a thing. So, Brendan, I will, assuming, I don't have to, I'm not caught or killed and you have to disavow any knowledge of me, I will talk to you next week.
This podcast will self-destruct in 2 seconds.